Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Today, joining us remotely is our co-host, Kyle Devitt. Kyle, how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling better. I thought I was kind of in the window for being contagious because I caught a little bit of the bad word, the COVID word last week. You know, it's part of the risk of coaching. Lots of exposure to the kids. We had inside practices, so it's kind of only a matter of time. I avoided it for 2 years. I felt really good about that. But you know, now I'm here and we're doing a podcast anyway.
Well, it's great to see you and very excited that you are able to join us today, because in studio, we have a very special guest, the head coach of MIT. It's actually called the Walter Alessi head coach position, Tyler O'Keefe. Tyler, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for coming into the studio. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
You're off to a great start, undefeated, I believe 7 wins. And it looks like so far you haven't had any competition. I believe the first 4 games this year, first 3 games, you only let up 4 goals per game. What are you doing right on defense?
Our guys are playing hard. You know, we're just playing as a team, both sides of the ball. You know, our goalie, Lucas, is seeing the ball well. And we're just, you know, playing as a team, playing as a unit.
Coach, you would have one of the most electric goal scorers in the country, and Ryan Gebhardt. He's a transfer from Stevens. I know you and I have talked privately for another article up on laxjournal.com right now about how he came to the school, but could you tell that story again?
We're excited and happy to have Ryan. Ryan reached out. I had a close friend, Ben Dwyer, on the team, reached out to him about potentially playing next year for a fifth year. And, you know, He applied to graduate school at MIT and was accepted. And, you know, we're just happy to have him.
Ryan has a friend at MIT on the team. Yeah. Looking for a graduate degree.
Ryan reached out, you know, was looking to do a fifth year. Ryan has a friend on the team, a close friend from upstate, was looking to play for his fifth year, reached out and would apply to a graduate program at MIT, and we're just happy to have him. He was accepted, and we're happy to have him on the team.
Obviously, he has fit in very well, and due to the COVID situation we've all been in the last couple of years, it's very rare for MIT to have a grad student come in. He is the first of its kind, right?
Definitely. We've had a graduate student in the past, but he wasn't someone that we knew about. So this was the first time that Ryan's come in. Definitely the first of his kind.
And coach, this is your fifth year. You've built the program up from, you know, as Jack alluded to, the legendary Walter Alessi, who not only helmed the lacrosse program, but the soccer program for a long time at MIT as well. When you accepted the position, what kind of vision did you have for the program? And is it kind of coming to fruition this year?
I would say definitely. When I first took over the program, this is exactly the goal that I set out for myself and for the program, was to, you know, compete and start to win lacrosse games and be competitive, get ready to play in a, you know, host a New Mac playoff game, get ready to play in the New Mac playoff. You know, our goals as a team are to, you know, get to that New Mac tournament and make a run of the New Mac championship. The New Mac championship has never been won by men's lacrosse. And I think it's a goal that I set out for myself that all of our staff and our players echoed and got on board. And we're starting to see some of that success now.
Kyle, you probably don't know this, but Tyler and I both played lacrosse at Springfield. And
I did. Okay. Thanks.
Ironically, we both played against Walter Alessi, and I'm a lot older than Tyler O'Keefe. So, I had the utmost respect for Walter Alessi. And my question to you about Walter Alessi, what a great human being he was, a great coach. And you know, really competitive program. What advice did he give to you when you took over, the first coach to ever replace Walter Alessi, or the second coach in the history of MIT lacrosse?
Yeah, Walter's been great. Walter still comes to all of our games. He's been a great mentor. He's really become a close friend. You know, his advice was, there's a lot of things at MIT that you're going to learn. There's a lot of unique challenges. And, you know, you just have to take it one day at a time. And you're going to meet some extraordinary young men along the way as well, and develop some really great relationships. And it's been great. He's been a great friend, great mentor, still comes to all the games. He's at every game. He's on the sidelines. He's been a great supporter of the program. I'm really happy to get to know him and learn some things from him along the way.
Players must love to have him on the sideline. He's very well known in New England lacrosse and well respected. I'm sure the opposing teams, the coaches, love seeing him too as well, because he's one of the best of all time. Question to you. We've talked a number of times about the recruiting at MIT, and I know three players that you had interested in coming to MIT as student athletes. One went on to Notre Dame, but he played club. One went on to Tufts. Is still there now. Another player went to Williams. Now, they got accepted at Notre Dame, Williams, and Tufts, but they weren't accepted in admissions at MIT. And I was blown away that they weren't accepted. They may have been waitlisted, but it's very, very difficult to be accepted in admissions at MIT, more so than probably any other college in the United States or in the world. So that must have been a challenge for you, and you've done a great job to find the players that fit that profile.
Yeah, it is a challenge. It's a challenge that all the coaches at MIT face. You know, we have to recruit and, you know, put our best foot forward to try to find the right pieces for MIT. You know, we try to make sure that we are supporting our student athletes, prospective student athletes, in the best way that we know how. But you know, at the end of the day, it really is up to admissions, and we just try to find the right pieces. You know, at every program, every athletic program at MIT, we try to find the right pieces for MIT. You know, we don't have a guaranteed admissions, but we just try to put our best foot forward to find the right pieces. And you know, it's a very long process. It's a very unique process, but so far it's been working out for us.
Coach, I'm just going through some of these majors for some of your players. Computer science with brain and cognitive science, mechanical engineering, economics, mathematics, and computer science, aerospace engineering, data science, electrical engineering, computer science. Look, one finance guy. You know, it's what's it like coaching a bunch of kids that are basically geniuses?
It's really special. You know, at the same time, they are, you know, I've coached at a couple different, you know, schools. They are very, very similar to other student athletes. I would say the one thing about them is just the amount of work they have off the field. You know, I know everybody has a lot of work off the field. I know a lot of student athletes out there do a lot of work, but they have to put in a lot of time and a lot of effort. And you have to sometimes meet them halfway and have the understanding about what these guys are doing off the field. And it's also just really special to be a part of. It's special to watch. I really enjoy, you know, hearing about their day and some of the awesome and unique things that they're doing. It makes coaching at MIT, you know, one of the, you know, it makes it what's special about it is hearing and seeing what these guys go through on a regular basis.
What is the graduation rate for the MIT program? I'm sure it's very high, but what has been your experience so far?
So far for the 5 years, everyone graduates. A lot of our guys will, you know, do some fifth year things, whether it's research, whether it's getting the 1 year MBA, but everybody goes off and graduates and you know, has a really great job and, you know, comes back on alumni weekend and shares their memories of the program. So
not only do they graduate on time. And you mentioned before the podcast when we were talking that they, obviously, they come out of there. People are looking for them because of the education and the time and effort they've put in to their education at MIT.
Yeah, I would say our guys probably go through a second recruiting process while they're at MIT. You know, the job fairs and the people that reach out to them, it's pretty special. You know, they work very hard for the things that they achieve off the field. But I also think that's part of what makes the work world seek them out, is they know what they're getting with most of our student athletes at MIT.
What's the most unique job that an alumni has acquired that you can tell us about?
Or one job that Kyle, you or I would never apply for?
We can't do any of them, Jack. Jack, we can't do any of them.
Speak for yourself, please.
I would say not a specific job, but I know that we have some alums out there that work in robotics and AI. So those are some pretty unique jobs that I would say are pretty special to hear about.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Very interesting. Developing robots and playing lacrosse at the same time. I never heard that before, Kyle.
it's pretty unthinkable for dollars like us that host podcasts. I just want to talk. We're all NUMAC guys, right? We're all playing the NUMAC when it was called the Program League or whatever it was. It's gone through many iterations. And now you have, you know, we had Coach Rocky Batty on from Babson on earlier, and we talked to him about this. All the schools are so different in the NUMAC. You know, you have you guys at one end of the spectrum, very technologically advanced, very right brain, left brain. I don't remember which one is actually mechanically inclined. It's the one I don't have. And then you have Emerson on the way other side, where I coached there for 2 years. It's all the other side. It's acting, it's creative, it's radio, it's TV. And then you have a bunch of these schools, like you have Coast Guard, that's a service academy. You know, you have Springfield that has develops coaches for all sorts of sports and athletic training and things of that nature. And you have Clark and Wheaton kind of riding the middle there as standard liberal arts colleges, Clark better than Wheaton. And then you have Babson as the business school. So you have all these different schools with these actually very good lacrosse programs. They're so improved in the last 5 years. How interesting is it to put together your schedule when you have to already play all these different kinds of teams with different kinds of schools, and you're not really competing for the same kids in recruiting, but you're still kind of competing at the same level?
Well, I think the NUMAC itself is very special for that exact reason. With all of the schools all being different and unique, it does make recruiting very interesting, in the sense of that we aren't recruiting the same type of kid. And it also makes, you know, the playing ability, you know, in the games that we're going to play, very special, I think, as well, because you get a different type of kid at every single school. And the NUMAC, from what I played in it, has gotten so much better. It's a really competitive league that I'm looking forward to, you know, playing out this year. I think there's a lot of exciting lacrosse in the NUMAC right now. I think it's a great time to be a part of the conference, so I'm excited about that.
In terms of the conference play, how many teams actually make the conference tournament and you have an automatic bid to the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, so 7 teams in the conference, 5 make it to our conference tournament. We have a play-in game, and we do have the automatic qualifiers. So it's going to be a great month here of NUMAC lacrosse. We got some big games lined up. I'm excited for the league as a whole. I'm excited for our program. And I think there's going to be a real competition this year within the league. So it's going to be fun.
Says a lot about the NUMAC too. The last couple of years, you've had at least 2 teams from the NUMAC make the NCAA tournament. Obviously, you want to win the tournament. You want to get the automatic bid, so you know you're going. But it says a lot about how far the league has come, because, again, from what I recall, the last 3 or 4 years, I think you've had at least 2 teams play in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, again, the league has just gotten a lot better. And, you know, it's exciting to play in. Babson's gotten very good. Coach Batty's done a great job over there. Coach Bugby's always going to have the Springfield guys ready to go. Coach Cohen's done a great job at Clark. Coach Colombini at Emerson. All these coaches have done a great job. Coast Guard joining the league just, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. And they've been in the conference championship game year in and year out here. So it's it's really fun to be a part of. You know, like I said, when I played in the league, it was a lot different. There was, you know, it was pretty easy to, as a Springfield guy playing at Springfield, it was pretty easy to get through the league. And now, you know, the league's wide open right now.
You know, last couple of years, looking at the scores, seeing Springfield go down to Babson and Coast Guard
and Clark
and MIT. I mean, you put a thumping to Springfield. I think the score was 19-9. And then Babson, I mean, Springfield beats Williams this year. So it's been a crazy season from the NUMAC, even though Williams is not in that conference. The other thing it's great to see is the NUMAC is getting recognized for not only the conference championship, but the conference itself. You know, back when you played, it was pretty much Springfield and everybody else. And you guys, you went to the tournament all 4 years. You know, you knew even if you didn't have a good season, we had the NUMAC tournament and we'll get our bid. It's not like that anymore, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I would say that's pretty accurate of how I felt as a player there. And I definitely don't feel like that as a coach anymore. But the NUMAC is getting a lot of recognition. I think we got some great teams in the conference. And like I said, this last month here of April is going to be special. It's fun to see the NUMAC get noticed. Kind of, you know, in New England, you know, usually the NESCACs is heavily talked about, and as they should be, it's a great league. But it's nice to see the NUMAC getting some recognition as well.
I do want to bring it up before Jack does that you defeated Clark pretty soundly, 23-9, my alma mater. And, right before that game, I actually interviewed, Ryan Gebhardt for the piece that's on laxjournal.com and in the recent issue of the magazine as well. And I jokingly at the end was like, hey, you know, like you don't have to like put up a ton of goals on Clark. Right. And he gets like, haha, no promises. And he dropped 9. So, you know, it's great to know that you have that kind of player on your squad. He, I believe, is the first team All-American in the history. It was preseason, but in the history of the program, I don't want to keep harping on him because you have some other excellent players that we can talk about as well. Gavin Vandenberg is doing really well, Heath Nilsson as well. So what changes have you made in recruiting to be able to land these, you know, for your conference and for New England, essentially blue chip players?
I think that, you know, from a recruiting standpoint, you know, every coach is different. Every coach is going to recruit differently. For us, obviously, we have to look at the academic piece first. But then I think the second thing is we're trying to just recruit the best lacrosse players that we feel are going to be the right fit for MIT and, you know, getting them on campus, developing a relationship with them. My assistant, Jake Versprill, another Springfield guy, has done a great job of keeping up the communications and just going out there and trying to find the right players for this fit. And I think at the end of the day, MIT itself is a great opportunity from the standpoint of an education. And I think the more that we can kind of build our roster and compete and get to that, you know, get big into the conference and get to a national level, I think that also helps recruit these quality players. But it's just about going out and also recruiting nationally. You know, you brought up Heath Nilsson. Heath Nilsson's a California guy. Gavin Vandenberg's from Illinois. You know, Gab Hart's from upstate. We got guys from all over the country. I think that's one advantage that I've seen, especially at MIT, that I look at as a very good thing. You know, we're able to recruit nationally, and it's, you know, pretty special. Very diverse roster. It's awesome.
You spent 2 years at Williams, 2 years at Springfield as an assistant coach, become the head coach at MIT. Recruiting styles very different at Springfield, Williams. How long did it take you to really understand what kind of player you were looking for and what kind of player would academically be accepted to the NIT admissions program?
The 2 years at Springfield that I spent, obviously, that was a big 2 years for me as a young assistant just to learn how to recruit. Just going out on the road and understanding the grind and understanding what you're doing when you're taking notes and what you're looking for. Perhaps what your head coach is looking for, what's going to fit to the program. And then I did do it 1 year in Memphis, Tennessee at Rhodes College under Dave Cesaro. So that was another experience, you know, going down there and recruiting to a new program. you know, recruiting nationally. That's kind of, I think, where I first learned that, you know, there was lacrosse other than New York, Maryland, and New England. And there's some good players all around the country. So recruiting for a whole different style there is where I started to learn about, you know, what you're looking for as a coach, what the head coach is looking for, but also that there was lacrosse all around the country and there were some good players all around the country. And then 2 years at Williams, same thing, very high academic school. I think that's where I picked up on a lot of these traits and a lot of the, you know, where to go and what you're looking for as far as GPA goes, what you're looking for as SAT, ACT scores go. And, you know, kind of prioritizing that sometimes before you prioritize the lacrosse.
Speaking of Williams, you have them on your schedule as now your strongest out of conference opponent on April 19th. Obviously, we don't want to look past Wheaton or Coast Guard, but that's kind of one of your national litmus test games because your other one with RPI, who just beat RIT and are in the top 5-10 of various polls, was postponed, unfortunately. So this Williams game is maybe the national spotlight on you guys for one of the first times, maybe in program history. Obviously, your background with them helped you get that game. But what is that game kind of, is that kind of a measuring bar for you guys outside of the conference? Or how do you see that contest coming up?
I think that, you know, as a coach and we talk about it as a program is we take every game one game at a time. So again, not looking past Wheaton, not looking past Coast Guard. But yeah, that program, you know, that game is going to be big for us. But I'm not looking at it. I don't think my players are as a national spotlight game to us. You know, we know we got a really good lacrosse team coming to town. They're going to be well coached. They play at a national level and we're going to go out and give our best and see where we're at.
Talk to us a little bit, Coach, about your philosophy in offense and maybe a little bit on defense. Kyle's more of a defensive guy, where I'm more of an offensive guy, even though he played offense. But
sure. I coached both. It's fine. Don't worry about it, Jack.
With your experience, again, back to coaching, talked about the recruiting, what you learned from the different programs. You learned, I'm sure, about what you liked on certain offenses and what kind of systems you like for the programs you coach on the defensive side. What are you teaching your players in terms of what do you like to run on offense and what kind of systems you have placed on the defensive side?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that I've taken away from coaching and kind of defining how I want a program to be run as a coach is everything has to be based off of team. So starting on the defensive end, playing team defense. You know, we don't try not to get too matchup oriented and we just want to be, you know, ready to help each other, ready to support the ball at all times, and playing fundamentally sound is our goal on defense. Obviously, there's some schematic things that we can put in there and run against some different teams, but just playing team defense and focusing on the team. And from the offensive side, you know, I think that some of the best offenses in the country are the ones that play fast and move the ball and dodge hard and keep the ball out of their stick. And as you can see, a lot of these top teams in the country, you know, averaging 50 shots a game, I think you got to shoot to get the ball in the back of the net. So, but I think every coach's philosophy can be different, but for mine, it's just playing team lacrosse. Coach Alessi for 43 years broke it down on team play. And we still do that to this day. And I think that's what it's all about for us, is just playing as a team.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
The Men's Lacrosse Championships, where speed and power meets precision and creativity. And they give it everything they got, from face-off to the final whistle. Go big for every goal. Go beyond your limits and enter the NCAA universe. The Men's Lacrosse Championships, May 28th through 30th at Rentschler Field in East Hartford, Connecticut. Get your seats today at ncaa.com/mlacrosse.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
Coach, last year you did not feel the season. How much of that decision was up to you, or was it a school thing, or is that just because I think that's one of the reasons you've quote unquote come out of nowhere for a lot of people that don't follow the new Mac are surprised at all the results. But you didn't play last year. You weren't the only team that didn't play last year. How did that affect how you went into this year?
I think that not playing last year obviously had an effect on the guys, you know, from the standpoint of maybe some development things as far as on the field goes. But I think off the field, you know, the team tried to come together as much as possible over Zooms or just getting to know each other through, you know, texting and calling each other. So I think while it was disappointing last year, and we've had some great seniors who didn't get to, you know, play. And I know that's the case for a lot of teams and a lot of seniors around the country. I think that there was a also almost, chip on our shoulder, things to prove. And we want to come out and play as a team. You know, you're never guaranteed that you're going to be able to come out here and play again tomorrow. And I think the guys, you know, really came together from a team standpoint on and off the field, and they were just excited. I mean, they hadn't been able to play lacrosse together, and you know, they were excited to come out and put the team first and get on the field and play. I think that was the biggest thing that I took away from it, was the excitement that we were going to have getting back out on the practice field, being out there with your brothers, and just getting better every single day.
Coach, I'm a student athlete. I want to take a look at MIT. I want to study engineering. I want to build robots. What does it take academically? Grade point average, SAT scores for admissions to at least, or you to take a look at certain players?
Yeah, I think that the one thing that is assumed about MIT is you just have to have a 4.0. And realistically, you know, the first thing that we just want to see from a student athlete is your actual transcript and how are you doing in those STEM subjects? How are you doing in the math? How are you doing in the science? And then from a testing standpoint, ACTs, again, math and science, how are you? And SAT standpoint, we're going to be taking a look at the math. And honestly, you know, that math score has to be as close to 800 as possible.
Kyle, was that your total score, 800 for both math and English?
I got a 1280. Thank you very much. And I took it without a calculator. So I don't know what that means, but I'm going to take it. I got a 720 on the verbal. So an English guy.
Yeah.
Thanks for exposing my SAT scores to the world. I really
well, I'm glad
you thank you for that.
I'm glad you were able to confirm.
Did they have SATs back when you were playing or no?
I remember taking them. They allowed you to take them for like 8 hours, even if you weren't, you know, allowed. Just they had the every week they would let you take them for like 5 hours if you didn't finish, or six or seven. I remember one day I was sitting in there for 6 hours taking my SATs, trying to figure out if I'd ever get through, but I did.
Yeah, one day I'll tell you about my GRE test. That was probably one of the worst days of my life. But one day we'll tell it, not on the podcast. I'm sorry. Okay. Not on the podcast.
Disappointing.
Coach, you're kind of one of the Springfield name, right? And I know Jack is going to love this question. You were kind of put into the coaching world almost preformed, right? I feel like Springfield guys had the advantage. You go through this factory that produces coaches. How does that happen at Springfield? What is the culture there that does that? Because I think the only other school that is comparable in lacrosse, just historically, is Cortland State, is the other school that produces a lot of lacrosse coaches. And then it's Springfield is probably number one or number two at this point. It's probably number one now. What is the process of going through that and knowing coming out of Springfield, I'm going to go coach? And then you went back there and were an assistant to kind of reemphasize that. How did that happen for you? What was your journey through that to become a college lacrosse coach?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all starts with Coach Bugby. That's where it starts. You show up, you know, even before you get to campus, you develop a relationship with him. And then you show up on campus for 4 years and you have a mentor, someone who a lot of guys who play for him think of him as a father figure, and he instills a culture, a family culture. And you just learn, you learn a lot about the game. You learn a lot about life. You learn a lot from the PE classes that you might have to teach. There's just this teacher, you know, this coaching teacher model there that you can't help but be kind of engulfed in. And for me, my journey, I had no idea what I wanted to do at Springfield College being a senior. And I know Coach had approached me, asked me to coach, go to grad school, be a GA. And I didn't have a plan after my senior year. And I said, why not? So I was excited about it, and I was actually going to go play lacrosse in England for a year. And then we had a graduate assistant who left early. Coach approached me at peak performance and said, you can't go to England. You're in next year. You're into it. And for someone to trust you as a 22-year-old like kid still, with a other guys that you've played with and other, you know, being responsible for the defensive side of the ball and, you know, showing you the way of, you know, team and culture, but then also learning, you know, how to coach and how to mentor young men. That's, it all comes from him. And that's really what makes, I think, Springfield special. It comes from him, and it comes from just the experience that you gain. I think that there's also, you realize that you become part of a family outside of just the guys that you graduated with or just the guys that you play with. Coach right here, meeting him and mentoring him and getting to know him, but other guys that have played underneath Coach, you know, Coach Kopacki from Western New England, Coach Jorgensen from St. Leo's, you know, these guys that on the road, you learn about their experiences at Springfield. You see what they do as coaches. You learn things from them. There's guys always out there, Springfield guys taking care of, you know, other Springfield guys. And that's kind of how you develop as a coach. But it all stems back from playing for Coach Bugby and creating that culture and that family that, you know, that you can pick up the phone at any time and call another Springfield coach. If you want to talk defense, if you want to talk offense, you want to talk ride and clearing. I think that's what makes it so special. You know, going down to Pickles Pub in Baltimore, and, you know, Coach has his own, during the convention, his own reunion with all these Springfield coaches, and you really get to see the family that he's created. And you get to meet these extraordinary coaches who are out there, and you get to sit down and talk to them, and you learn a lot. It's a pretty special thing to be a part of, the mafia, as they would call it.
Coach O'Keefe spoke about that night at the convention in January, 50, 60 college coaches in one restaurant at one time, no egos, everybody's shaking hands, just talking, how's your family? How's your brother? How's your sister? How's your mom? Whatever it is, you know, it's all about, you know, how you are in the moment and what can we do to help you? Or, you know, there have been guys that have attended that event and gone on and gotten jobs because they've met different coaches within that fraternity that night. It's just really a great night that Coach Buggy has put together, and really special when you're there. And, you know, Nick Myers is there from Ohio State, and coach at Rutgers is there, and you can go on, and Sean Quirk, and but it's pretty cool. It really is.
We don't have that at Clark, so I'm jealous. You know, like, I remember when I went into coaching, I was like, hey, I should go into coaching. They're like, whatever, Kyle, no one cares. And you know, it's very different when you don't have that kind of support. So I think that's amazing. I wanted to follow up on the recruiting aspect. We've already kind of gone through the fact that you don't really compete against other schools in the NESCAC or the NUMAC for the same players. Who do you compete with for players? Where are they going? What are the other schools that are kind of, you know, in your territory as far as MIT goes?
I would say that we run into, you know, sometimes we run into the Ivies. You know, I would say, you know, some of the NESCACs. But the thing with our process is it's so late that a lot of these guys are not choosing maybe the lacrosse path besides MIT. And I think, you know, when we start to see that, you know, these guys end up going to a lot of other great schools. Or specifically engineering schools, you know, so we do cross paths, I would say, with, you know, with the NESCACs, with the Ivies. We have some here and there where we cross paths with like the Haverford or Swarthmore, you know, higher academic schools around. Sometimes we cross paths with Babson, but for the most part, you know, it's usually by the end, you know, when we get into our process, really, you know, in the fall, it's a lot of these guys have decided on MIT or, you know, some other really good schools, Stanford, Cal Poly, some of these great schools that don't have men's lacrosse programs. They have club programs. And you can see that's also, you know, when you talk to a recruit like that, they're in it for the academics first. And lacrosse is definitely a bonus. And, you know, obviously we feel that, especially when we talk to a young man like that and lacrosse is a bonus, that they would really, you know, they love lacrosse still, and they would be great for us at MIT, but obviously it's just not their first priority. You know, getting a great education is their first priority. So
what is your average freshman class size? I know you have a ton of really high impact contributors. Your faceoff guy, Matthew Sardis, is a freshman who's 6'3". You have a ton of massive guys on your roster. Like, I kind of want to see how you guys play, because this is the biggest MIT team I've ever seen. Like, I remember playing against MIT and it was like all dudes that were my size, and I was like, oh, this is gonna be all right. But you have incredible athletes on this team.
Our average class size is between 10 and 13. And as far as the size, I've heard that a lot this season, actually, about maybe for some fans and some fans out there, and some of the opposing coaches, about how we're big. I think I'm not exactly a big guy either, but I think when you're around them, you don't really realize it until you watch like the first game of the year and you realize that, you know, we are pretty big on the sidelines. But again, it's, you know, it's for us, we're just looking for the right guys for MIT. If they happen to be over 6 feet, then obviously that's definitely a bonus, but we got some good guys all over the field that are some really good athletes that are still under that 6 foot range.
So you're talking about the demands in the classroom are very different at MIT for your players. Do you have to have practices that are at different times during a week or balance in order to fit their academic schedule so you can have a roster at your practice?
So at MIT, there's a 2 hour block, 5 to 7 every day, that are actually allotted kind of for athletics and other activities going on campus. So we have practice every single day from 5 to 7, which is really helpful in season for our guys, because they can structure a schedule around that and they know every single day practice is from 5 to 7. It's also very helpful as a coach because you know exactly when your practice is every single day. Typically we'll have lifts a couple times a week, film sessions, things like that. So they do know that there will be some things, some lacrosse related activities outside of that 2 hour window. But for the most part, they know 5 to 7 every single day, you know, we're locked in for lacrosse. So
they're locked in for lacrosse from 5 to 7 every day. And then everything else is optional based on their academic schedule.
The training activities during the off season that are put out there are usually structured in a way where most of the team can make.
You're expecting all your players to get to one of the three lifts or get to the film and so on and so forth. And I just wanted to make that clear. So that's interesting that you have that block 5 to 7. So again, because their off the field schedule is crazy.
Yep.
They know they've got 5 to 7 lacrosse. Very important because they know how to manage their time better than I ever did. So just that's great information.
Yeah, they definitely know how to manage their time. I would say it's definitely an adjustment for some of our freshmen coming in, but we try to be as a coaching staff prompt and to the point about our schedule and get the schedule out to them ahead of time. And when we have to make changes, you know, we also understand as coaches, I understand as a coach that where I work and, you know, things are going to come up, you know, they are there for academic reasons first. So just have to be flexible and be understanding and, I think that's also what makes it great.
It's actually very similar to your inverse school, which I would say is Emerson. When I coached at Emerson, we would have practice and, you know, kids would miss. And I'd be like, why weren't you in practice yesterday? And he's like, oh, I have to go light a play. And I was like, you have to what? You know, but for you guys, it's like, we have a lab. We have to go to a robotics lab. We have to go visit this company and see how they do things and go on field trips and have all these different exposures and lectures that is kind of, I would say, probably a little more challenging than most coaches have to deal with.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, coaching at Williams, I think we rated to some of the same things that we see here. Maybe not as frequently. I think there was a little bit maybe less of that, but still, like, that's where I learned as an assistant about from a high academic standpoint about the importance of that these guys are going to class and that, you know, their schedules are hectic and there's a different amount of stress on them as a student athlete. You know, they're here for, you know, they're here to play lacrosse, but at the same time, they're here for an academic purpose first and foremost. And I think as a coach, you just have to learn that, you know, you have to, if you want them to be at their best on the field, you got to make sure that they're taking care of everything off the field to make sure that you have their focus.
Just to kind of wrap all this up, you are getting national attention from the polls. And I talked to a couple people that vote in those polls. I contribute to at least one of them. And that's probably a new experience for you guys. How has the team handled that kind of national exposure that you guys really haven't had before?
I would say that the team is excited about it. Obviously, as a coach, I'm excited about it. The alums are excited about it. There's a lot of people that are excited about the success we're having and the national attention that we are getting. But at the same time, we're just focused on getting better every single day and taking it one day at a time and taking it one game at a time. I think our guys do a great job. While they're excited, they feel like there's a lot more out there to prove, and they want to build off of that and get ready to keep climbing in poles and to keep achieving things. So while they're excited, while they're happy about it, they stay locked in every single day and just keep trying to get better. Poles don't win you championships.
Coach, and on that note, unfortunately, we have run out of time. So really appreciate coming into the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Kyle, it's great seeing you. And actually, this works out pretty well not having you in the studio.
Yeah, I thought you'd like it. I thought you'd like it more. So that's I'm glad you like it. But I am going to sign us out officially. Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.